You're back in the DFSR, and we are here with our NFL podcast for Friday, October 14th. Somewhat of a take two on the podcast as we sit here live in beautiful, beautiful New Hampshire. I'm here with my good friend,
James Davis,
and business partner for Daily Fantasy Sports Rankings. I'm Doug Norrie, and we, if it sounds a little stilted, it's because we are on take two of the podcast as I get the sound adjusted, and this time, hopefully, correctly. We're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short. And just assume that you heard all the hilarious jokes we made the first time around on the podcast. And
yeah. Hopefully we can get to our leaf peeping sooner rather than later, because now this is really cutting into the perfect time to go see the vista from Garrison Hill.
We had some sick fall foliage jokes that led off the last podcast. We're from Daily Fantasy Sports Rankings. You can head over and grab a free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab that'll help you calculate optimal lineups for both FanDuel and DraftKings. It's free for 3 days, then just $29.95 a month after that. That includes NFL, NBA in a couple weeks, NHL, although the NHL basic projections, and MLB while we still have a few games left in that season. All right, we're going to talk and break down every game on the NFL slate today. The Broncos and the Chargers played last night. Admittedly, we did not watch this game. I was traveling with the family, and then we blew into town right around the time the game started. So we just, hey, some things have to go, and sometimes family first. Not usually, but this time it was the case. The Chargers end up taking it to the Broncos. Just from reading through and watching highlights of the game, it doesn't appear as if this was actually a one-possession game that it's kind of finished off as. We watched some highlights today. We read some analysis. What could you take away just going forward from that game?
Yeah, the big takeaway for me in this one was Hunter Henry. So, you know, Antonio Gates comes back, does get the 6 targets, but he only turned 2 of those into receptions for 16 yards. Henry goes out there, gets 8 targets, so he out-targets Gates, and hauls in 6 for 83 and a touch. And that, to me, is a very interesting sign. I don't know if it's necessarily a sign of a changing of the guard, but it could at least foretell, you know, kind of a dual tight end threat. Listen, they just don't have any wide receivers, and they want to pass the ball. So I think Henry could be a guy that could continue to return value going forward. Obviously, it will depend on how he's priced, but it seems like his demise wasn't as great as we thought it would be with Gates coming back. So in a world where just no tight ends are good, worth keeping an eye on. The other big takeaway I have, and I don't know if it's a huge takeaway necessarily, but that was Melvin Gordon. He just went out there, 27 carries, so you love the opportunity, but just 3.5 yards per carry once again. And if that's going to be, that's been a trend with him all season long, so sure, Denver good defense and all that sort of thing, but it's really not looking like he's going to be a guy you can count on for 4+ yards per carry. He's just not, and that included a 48-yard run, so just that's a terrible, every other run was awful basically, except for that one big run. So yeah, I'm not very bullish on him going forward, but yeah, I think I will like Henry depending on how things shake out price wise.
All right, let's break down we'll go through game by game and talk about the DFS implications for each of them. If you didn't listen to the last podcast, we broke down our cash game plays over there. So if we blow through a couple plays and don't go into depth on some of these guys, we'll just make mention of that we talked, you know, in depth about about 10 or 11 different guys in the last podcast, so check that one out. First game on the slate is the Bills and the 49ers. The 49ers move Kaepernick into the starting quarterback position this week. In the old not sure what that does for anybody category, I don't think it makes the 49ers that much better except a changing of the guard for him. The Bills are really heavy favorites. They started at -7.5 all the way up to -9 now. They have an implied total of getting close to 27, which I think will be their highest of the whole entire season. What do you like? Can you see yourself either A, talking yourself into Kaepernick here just because of the price? He's very, very cheap on both sides. Or is there anything you like on the Bills side of the ball?
Well, to start with Kaepernick, I think on DraftKings, where he's so much more affordable, he will be an interesting consideration. I mean, he's a guy, so I think the big adjustment for San Francisco this season has actually been the way they've deployed their quarterback. They've actually been using Blaine Gabbert in the way that probably Colin Kaepernick should have been used all along, which is they're doing a lot of zone reads, getting him out, letting him make decisions and take off if he doesn't like what he sees. And that's exactly what Kaepernick has been designed to do. So, you know, there were seasons where Kaepernick would average 40 yards rushing a game. And if if this is the best situation for running and he's rustiest in terms of actually passing the ball, I think we could see quite a good rushing performance here. Now, with Kaepernick, the issue was always that the passing never really clicked on fully, never really topped 60% completion percentage. But again, if you're on DraftKings and you don't need a huge performance to turn over that price, then yeah, I think he's a strong consideration. On FanDuel, I think you can probably just do better. 6,400 is cheap, but not exactly free. So I wouldn't be surprised if he paid value on that price, but I just don't see the reason to go out on a limb there, especially given that they're such huge underdogs. Now, on the Bills side of the ball, I think it's a little bit more interesting. When we talked about this earlier, I think you're a little bit higher on the Bills than I am, so do you want to give your case there?
Well, right now, if you run optimal lineups through DraftKings on the site, you're getting Tyrod Taylor in the top lineup. So at first blush, that feels weird because he's just not a guy that you tend to think, you know, oh, cash game play. You know, when I say optimal lineups too, some of these are typically geared a little bit more toward cash game safety, and Taylor is probably not the guy you consider in a situation like that. The thing where I can, and I get why the system likes him, and it probably might just even be correct. The 49ers allow a ton of opponents plays per game. I think they're fourth most in the NFL. That's a Chip Kelly sort of hallmark, just running a ton of plays, both being not that good on offense and just kind of running things rather quickly, all things considered. I think that really helps a guy like Taylor. His rushing ability, and this is something we talked about in terms of guys like Cam Newton last time around, where if you just are going to get out and rush, you know, five times a game, somewhere in that range for around 30 yards with the option that you might even get into the end zone, that makes up for the fact that you might not throw either one accurately, which is a Taylor issue, or just not throw that much. So if he's only going to throw 25 to 27 times, that's not a ton, but if it, you know, the other five of those plays are going to be him getting out into the rush game at 5,300, I kind of think I just might be okay with it. And you know, I think the system does a pretty good job of grabbing some of these cheaper values quarterbacks in good situations. It was like this with Mariota last week against Miami. He was falling into that bottom range of salary, and the system just frankly loved him as I think the top overall points per dollar play. It worked out for maybe some of the same reasons it'll work out for Taylor here. So I can see myself talking. I can talk myself into Taylor. I can talk myself into possibly pairing Taylor and McCoy together in cash games and just figure that's going to be a majority of the Bills offense.
Well, anytime you can lock up that Bills offense, man, well, like they're historic. Jim Kelly out there.
Yeah. Well, you know, you joke, but it wasn't that funny of a joke either. But like, 26.5 implied points for the Bills will be, I suspect, the highest that you're looking at all season for them. And if you can, that's a lot. The 26.5 creeping toward 27 is just one of the higher overall.
Yeah, that's a reasonable total. And I think, I mean, it is nice for Taylor that he does kind of get it coming and going with the running and the passing. But yeah, I mean, I'll give it to you on Taylor too, because on DraftKings, that 5,300 price means that even his last 3 weeks, he's paid better than 3 points per dollar. And that's about what you want from your quarterback on DraftKings. Like, unless you're going deep punt situation, which we kind of are here, then you can't really expect a whole lot more than that. And the PPR means that paying up at a position like wide receiver or for a pass-catching running back like Le'Veon Bell, it's a lot more worth it to do that. So I guess I don't hate playing Taylor there, figuring that he'll get a decent chunk of it. Bell to me, though, or McCoy rather, feels more like a guy who is going to wind up just getting cut. He's going to be like, you know, the fifth running back that I would want to play there. A guy that we look at this time in the week and say like, yeah, he's still a good value. And while that might be true, and if you're building lineups by hand the old-fashioned way, scrawling them out on a stone tablet or whatever, instead of just using an optimizer, then I can see like, you're like, hey, I have 6,900 left over, why not play McCoy? But for me, I'm just going to go like another 800 higher and just grab a guy like, you know, DeMarco Murray, or even pay up quite a bit more for Bell, or maybe even go down to Howard at 6,200. He just seems like in that no man's land to me. Yeah. And it's hard to imagine him making the cut for me.
And I should mention that the guys you mentioned, and we'll get to some of them as we go forward, and some we talked about last podcast, are all better points per dollar plays than McCoy in our system. So I'm not stating that I would do it. I just don't think it's the worst idea ever. But I'm with you. Each of the guys that you mentioned, I would play over McCoy. And there is a decent gap in terms of points per dollar plays from those guys down to him, though I still like the shady part of it.
Now, what do you make of the accusations that you purposefully give bad picks so that you'll win on Sunday? Like, you purposefully mislead the listeners and readers so that you can win big money.
Are you channeling like inner complaints that we haven't heard before?
Well, the inner emailing guy who thinks that for some reason we built this huge business and built a business where we're making a living off of it, but our big strategy is to nickel and dime and hopefully make a few extra $100 by screwing the very people who pay our bills and help all that stuff. Yeah,
no, I know there's always
there'd be some kind of conspiracy.
There's a conspiracy theorist in most people out there, but I know we hear those things every once in a while. I just usually just hit delete on it and move on. All right, let's go into the next game on the list. We have the Rams heading into Detroit. This, I think, you know, we already recorded this one time. This is around where we stopped for the first recording. And our general sense of this game was sort of just skip. You kind of broke down a little bit with Marvin Jones. Tell me why we're getting further and further away from Marvin Jones, where we were bullish on him to start the season, and that is the graph sort of trended in the wrong direction for him.
Yeah, well, just everything is going the wrong way. I mean, fewer targets, fewer receptions, fewer yards. Those are all bad signs from my perspective. And the problem for him is that he's still priced like the guy who scored 35 points against Green Bay. And he just doesn't seem to be that guy. I mean, he went under a 10% target share against Philly. And Philly's been kind of tough on wide receiver ones this season. So maybe not the end of the world, but he just seems to be getting phased out a little bit there. Or teams seem to be picking up on the fact that Detroit's going to deploy him as a wide receiver one. And he just might be the type of guy who thrives more getting the other team's second best cornerback than their best. So I'm not personally, I mean, 7,700 on FanDuel seems simply out of bounds. And I won't go there. Oh, one thing we did miss, actually, was the Bills defense. We talked about them the first time we recorded it. Bills defense, a very strong play this week. Yep. Arguably a chalk play, especially considering, you know, 49ers' lowest point total of the week. Weirdness with Kaepernick. Definitely interceptions. Definitely big upside on defensive touchdowns and things like that, given the number of plays that should be run in this game. So just that would have been a notable omission. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think they will be the chalk defense this week. There's a couple other ones you consider, but the fact that they're not that expensive makes them, you know, pretty enticing from that side of the ball. All right, the next game we have is the Browns head into Tennessee. Tennessee coming off a nice week against Miami. They're in another good spot with Mariota and Murray, kind of two other guys showing up near the top of our just points per dollar list. Murray in particular, give me the cash game case for either Mariota or Murray, or maybe one or the other. And is there anything on the Brown side of the ball at all here?
Well, I think Murray actually. So, and this is he's like the exact reason why I don't like guys like McCoy this week. Murray comes out last week, 32 touches against Miami, 121 rushing yards. He's clearly their definitive goal line back, even though he didn't get in the end zone last week. Week before that against Houston, 27 overall touches. And the Titans are actually favored this week, which is not going to be a normal course for them. So I think Murray, I mean, he's definitely looking like the old Murray of old now that he's out of the toxic Philly environment there. So, yeah, I think he's just a phenomenal cash game play, very reasonably priced on both sites. We went deep on him, so we probably don't need to go too much deeper. But Mariota, I think, is actually a more interesting question because he, of course, comes out last week and puts up 30 fantasy points. Are you feeling good about Mariota this week? Or
no, I wasn't. It was so funny because I wasn't even feeling great about him last week. The system loved him last week, had him as the top overall points per dollar quarterback heading into Miami, which just, I mean, this is where I get a little sometimes gun shy, where I think we ended up downgrading his projection just a little. He had been coming into optimal lineups and we just looked at it and said, was he a favorite to be play's best game of the season? Probably not. So we pulled it down a little bit and basically just guaranteeing at that point he was going to have his game of the season.
Well, sure, but there were data-driven reasons to pull him down too, right? Like, you know, the completion percentage was particularly concerning. You know, back-to-back performances against Houston and Oakland, ostensibly good matchups, where he was under 50% for both of those weeks, I think rightfully led us to believe that he was going to struggle against Miami. And we should point out too, like, the 5.6 yards per attempt in that game are pretty awful. And sure, he went out and completed 70% of his passes, but just 163 passing yards. You know, he did break off some long runs and wind up with 60 yards rushing and a touch as well, but not a guy who's liked to repeat that kind of performance. His previous high in carries for the season was 4. He had never gotten in the end zone this season on that. You know, was throwing more interceptions than touchdowns. So I think we saw Mariota's best game of the season by far. And while, yeah, he'll remain a decent big upside tournament play, I think he's actually, you know, kind of that paper tiger where the upside seems bigger than it always will be, generally speaking. And just because he spiked his, you know, his lottery ticket performance one week doesn't mean that he's going to do it again.
No, I'm with you. And again, just to reiterate, Murray in cash games feels like the way to go, especially on a site like DraftKings. Just so many carries. Yeah.
And the receptions, too.
Yeah, and the receptions as well. The next game are the Eagles and the Redskins. Eagles will not go undefeated this year, as I'm sure those in Philly were already penciling themselves in.
For devastating.
Carson Wentz, 16-0 in his rookie season. They lose last week to the Lions. They now take on the Redskins. They are slight favorites going into this game, though I will say for the Eagles, it's a little tough. It's probably built more on their defense than some of their offensive, especially from fantasy consideration capabilities. What do you think on either side of the ball here?
Well, I think the only thing we were even looking at for this week was the tight ends in this game, and Jordan Reed and Zach Ertz. Now, Jordan Reed represented until, you know, it looks like he might miss this game with a concussion, and probably will actually, but he had represented kind of what passes for a high-end tight end this year, even though the results hadn't totally been there. At least, you know, again, he's been better than everyone else, but on a price perspective, it's hard to pay up for him when you can pay up and get guys at skill positions who are just putting up better totals. That being said, Reed's absence potentially will open up, you know, more targets in the passing game for sure. So we've seen guys like, you know, Pierre Garçon succeed when more of those short range targets become available. We've seen Jameson Crowder succeed as well. Now, I don't know that I want to try and figure out who's going to get all those extra targets, and I certainly don't want to do that in my cash games, but for a big tournament, I could see it happening. Vernon Davis, I think, is potentially interesting. You know, he'll come in at a quite a cheap price for you. And given that tight end is so bad, getting him at the minimum on FanDuel is very intriguing to me. So that might be a direction we wind up heading, but it's obviously going to be contingent upon Reed's actual absence, not just a limited role or anything like that.
What do you think if Reed were to be out? Like I said, I think he's just not going to play. If he were to not play, how many targets do you think we could pencil in Vernon Davis for?
Yeah, so I think potentially quite a few. I mean, in week two, Davis garnered 18% of the target share when he was on the field. The big problem for Davis actually hasn't been target share, it's been snaps. And so given that he's averaging about 30 snaps a game this season, if he comes in and just fills right in and gets all of Reed's snaps, I mean, Vernon Davis is not just a guy. Like, he's a guy who's had real success from a fantasy perspective in the past, and I could see him putting up a good total.
He'd be a guy that if we were to give him 6 to 7 targets, I believe he'd probably end up being just the tight end play on FanDuel, yeah. and possibly even DraftKings as well. So that's a situation really to monitor. We would then, you know, divvy out some of the other targets to the guys you mentioned before, though I don't think that would do it enough to get to push any of those guys up into the upper echelon. Again, Philly is a very good defense, which is what is going to throw off things there. I think they're second overall in DVOA this season, and they're a real defense. So that's the only thing that tempers my excitement a little bit. But Davis at the minimums, if you thought he was
2,500 on DraftKings.
Yeah, it would be the play there.
Because he's already the top points per dollar guy on the targets, assuming Reed was going to play. So,
right.
Yeah, I think he'll wind up being in the DraftKings lineups for sure. As for the Eagles and Redskins and everybody else that's playing in the game, I mean, for me, I'm not personally too interested. It's a running back by committee in Philly, and, you know, Matt Jones really hasn't done too much with his role in Washington. So, you know, again, the quarterbacks, this is just kind of a game with a low total, and that makes it mostly a stay away. Maybe you can make a case for, like, the Eagles defense or something if you really want to just mix it up there and go based on the fact that they're the best DVOA team of the season. They are favored.
Slow.
I mean, they pay slow.
The Chip Kelly effect, like, you know, we mentioned the opponent's plays per game for how San Francisco, Philly's going the other direction. They actually
rank
first. They are, excuse me, the very, very least amount of plays. And it's actually kind of not even close. Like, their opponents are running the least amount of plays by somewhere in like the 10 to 11% range, or excuse me, 10% range. So that's just such a huge, it's so slow. It's just such a glacial pace to play against. It's really hard to get fantasy guys when you're just not going to see, when you're going to see a significant downgrade and just overall just plays that you're on the field. So I'd say the Philly side to me is just kind of whatever. And like I said, the Davis thing is only because of the price.
Yep.
All right, we talked about Tom Brady in the last podcast and just the idea that he's clearly back. And if you want the breakdown on him, go back and listen to that. But we put him as one of the top cash game plays this week. He'll probably just be one of the top cash game plays every week just because of the way, just sees Tom Brady and the way they use him. I believe the Patriots have either the highest or second highest total implied team points this week, somewhere up there, creeping up toward 28 points. Where do we, besides Brady, How do we sort of view the Patriots receiving situation here? Hogan had a huge game last week. Bennett caught a couple touchdowns. Do the Patriots at this point just have almost too many guys that it's hard to sort of hone in the value on their passing game or just their offense in general? Give me some thoughts on the Patriots here.
Yeah, I mean, I actually think Brady is going to be over-owned relative to his actual value this week. He's not coming in as, you know, even in the top 10 in terms of points per dollar in our system this week. And I tend to trust that when it's happening. And I get that the narrative is there. Cincinnati's not been an awful defense this season. And while Brady is great and they're going to use him in all facets, I've talked about in the past how, you know, LeGarrette Blount seems to be eating more into like an actual RB1 role rather than the Patriots' old de facto short passing game is the new running game sort of thing. So while it wouldn't shock me to see him be good, like I you know, that wouldn't be surprising, I don't think, to anyone. He's not a direction I'm going to personally go in for cash games. And then I'm going to be in the unenviable position of trying to root against a guy who's probably going to be awesome anyway. So right. I'm not really sure what you make of that there. Other than the fact that he's just expensive, right? Like, obviously, if you're in a season-long league, you're going to play the guy. But in daily fantasy, we can choose between all the guys. And since I only get one quarterback, he's probably not going to be the guy who's in my lineups.
What about receivers? Like, what do we do with the targets here? Where do we sort of place them? Can we look for a bounce-back game for Edelman, who we were high on last week, and the targets just didn't end up materializing? Is Hogan a guy that's just going to be... I mean, this Chris Hogan kind of strikes me as, like, a Patriots special, just sort of a dude that just appears and one week has 10 targets or something like that, and the next week has 3. Like, I just don't... It's very difficult to make what this team is on offense, except for just really good and just have too many weapons almost.
Yeah, right. Well, I think that's kind of where I'm at with it. I think Martellus Bennett there gumming up the works doesn't really help. I mean, we saw them try to do the two tight end thing in the past with Hernandez and Gronkowski, and if Bennett's there, and especially if he's going to be chewing into a lot of the red zone targets. See, Bennett's weird because he's probably too expensive to trust at that price, because if the touchdowns go away, then you're just miserable and you're, you know, killing yourself on a points per dollar basis. But if he's in there and stealing even one touchdown away from the other guys who you want to consider more, then you're just in real trouble. So yeah, I mean, it's crazy to say for a team that's going to keep putting up these big totals, but I'm just not sure where the value is from a fantasy perspective here.
Yeah, just worry. I don't mind Brady. I think Brady's floor is high enough that I would consider yeah, that's him fair. In cash games. But that after that, I think you're just mostly looking at tournament plays and just sort of trying to spread out and just hoping that you grab on to whatever the Patriots
did. Yeah, if you guessed right, if you got Bennett last week and Brady, then you're feeling great, right? But most people didn't guess Bennett.
So. It's funny, too, with the Patriots, because you can figure out early in the game sometimes where they've figured out what they're going to exploit, and they'll just kind of do it over and over and over again. We just don't have enough of a window sometimes into what their plan is, even though their plans always kind of just seem to work. On the Bengals side of the ball, can you see yourself talking yourself into like an AJ Green, Andy Dalton pair if you think that they're playing catch up?
Only for big tournaments, but sure. I mean, I think that's a very reasonable. We've seen that formula work in the past where you go big name wide receiver one, a reasonable quarterback, and that's what you have in Dalton and Green, but you're not excited about it. I mean, the Patriots. It's one of those things where it's actually this works this way for the Patriots offense too, where oftentimes when teams know what's going to happen, like a lot of the times the guys like Bennett wind up getting so many touchdowns or whatever because the other teams know about Edelman and Gronkowski, right? And these are grown-ups NFL players. They're great. They have brilliant coaches. So they know to shut down those guys. And what makes the Patriots kind of next level is they find the Chris Hogan or Martellus Bennett of that game and go from there. And I think on defense, the Andy Dalton, AJ Green thing is going to be no secret to them. Now, it might be like the old Mike Tyson thing where it's like everyone's got a plan until they get hit sort of thing. And maybe Dalton and Green are at that level. I don't personally see them that way. And so that's not a pair I'm going to be trying to build around.
All right. We have the Ravens head into New York to face the Giants. A couple different injury considerations here. It looks like Steve Smith is probably not going to play. We talked about Mike Wallace and Dennis Pitta in the last podcast. I think the ideas for them remain the same, especially if Smith weren't to play. Wallace was upgraded to a full go in practice, where there was some concern possibly for him. That doesn't look like it's going to be the case. We really like the targets that he stands to get. Perryman sort of in that same range for the Ravens, if you think that Smith's targets go somewhere, especially along with Pitta. The Giants, another week of Odell Beckham talk, where it's like, well, this is what we're going to do this week to get Odell Beckham back into the offense. That has sort of creeped its way into the narrative as well. What do we think about this game with the Giants? Or, and we, like we said, we already discussed some of the Ravens side in the last podcast.
Yeah, I think Odell Beckham is a really interesting conversation piece because, like, last season, a lot of his value came from those reps he got in the slot when he was in there and, you know, kind of breaking up down the middle, catching the ball and running with it, using his great athleticism in terms of, you know, yards after the catch. But with the addition of Sterling Shepard, he's really lost a lot of those reps, and it's just given the Giants another weapon, especially in the middle of the field. And if they don't want to see Odell Beckham take big hits, which occasionally you're going to do in the middle of the field, you know, we might see them use Beckham a little bit more conservatively. And if that's the case, you know, we've talked about this with Julio Jones and with others where, you know, teams actually kind of get smart about just not putting the ball in the hands. It's, you know, people are generally aware of the old running back carries thing, and that makes sense. You know, getting tackled a bunch of times isn't that great, but some of the most high impact tackles come on wide receivers. And I think that, you know, the Giants continuing to deploy him more conservatively is not a good thing overall. That said, them coming about and saying that they're going to talk about getting in the hands and what a great playmaker he is.
Talk about, quote, moving him all over the field.
Exactly. Like, that leads me to believe that we might at least have a one-week spike in that regard. So I think it's a fine week to consider him. But at some point, what a team actually does has to outweigh what they say they're going to do. And so in the put-up or shut-up time mode, I'm just waiting for them to actually use Beckham the way we hope they're going to use him.
For sure. Victor Cruz, you know, is another guy that sort of, although he didn't have any target share last week, he still is on the field, so he's running plays out of the slot. I don't know. It's just, the Giants are just kind of a mess. The same with the running game. You're not sure Rashad Jennings might be back. I'm not sure it really matters because they have guys like Darkwell and Rainey that they're probably just full-on committee. I don't think they like
it. And I think Rainey is going to continue getting the receptions, mm-hmm. even if Jennings comes back, so.
Yeah, it's just kind of, forget about it for me. I don't mind Terrence West to some degree on the Ravens side of the ball if you think that he's going to get the touches. Only 13 last week, but if he can get back into like 21 the week before on the ground, if you think that the Ravens can either play a possession game against the Giants defense that just isn't that great, or if they are able to even get any semblance of a lead early, I don't mind taking a stab on West and maybe in some tournaments just because there's so many other good running backs this week. And he's just a little bit cheaper. I don't think he'll be... This is, again, strictly only a tournament play. But I'm hoping that he can... And from that point of view, if I'm playing him, I'm hoping he creeps back up into that 20-touch range. And at that point, I think he is actually a value for tournaments. And especially because he's just off everyone's radar at this point.
Well, he's definitely... I mean, you're certainly going to get separation on him. But, you know, that might be trending over the line for me in terms of you're getting separation for good reason. Because it's a bad play. Right. So, I mean, yeah, his 21 touches against Oakland, fine. But, like, we're seeing tons of running backs this season who are getting 30 touches a game. And West also just isn't very good. And so, like, I don't know. I feel like West, like, your best-case scenario might be that Oakland performance where he goes out and gets 113 yards and a touchdown. Like, let's say he gets 2 touchdowns, maybe. And then he's up past 20 fantasy points. And you kind of still haven't gotten away with anything on 6,500. I mean, yeah, you're happy, for sure, if he does that. But that seems like that would be the super far end of the bell curve in terms of what we can expect for him. And I hesitate to say a guy isn't a tournament play, but again, he won't be in my rotation of tournament plays this week.
Not with you. This is another name to throw out there.
Sure.
The next game is one of the more interesting ones from a fantasy perspective, and that always happens whenever the Saints play because their defense is so horrible and they have some offensive firepower. So really just about any time the Saints are on the docket, we end up talking about that game just in general from a fantasy perspective. Right now, Cam Newton is the highest projected points play in our system at quarterback, and I just believe it from any position. Actually, maybe Antonio Brown might be a little higher, but he's way, way up there. He was a guy showing up in optimal lineups on FanDuel for us going into Thursday. Are we feeling comfortable running Cam out in cash games at this point, considering he sat out a week with a concussion, and for some of the reasons we talked about in the last podcast of if he's going to run less, are we scared at all with Newton, or does the matchup dictate that we can just lock and load him against the Saints?
Yeah, it's kind of a close one for me. I mean, I think this is something that you and I always kind of go back and forth on, which is the big question of, do we take a guy who has the highest upside but potentially some injury risk, or do we just go in a different direction? I suspect with Newton, we're going to wind up landing on the side of playing him, although I'm concerned that one of the things he does best, which is run the ball, could either lead to his re-injury, which would take him right out of the game. Like, you'd have to think that any question marks whatsoever, he'll be taken out, or that they'll just not, you know, design runs for him, not draw them up that way, and then you're taking away a big hit on his value. So, I mean, thankfully with the Saints, you know, they've allowed the most total points per game this season. They're in the top 5 in terms of yards allowed per game this season, so clearly a very good matchup, but, you know, I wish we didn't have the concussion question, I guess. And so, like, if there were no concussion question, it was just like kind of the relatively lackluster performance question, I would have no issue at all just throwing him in there and, you know, pushing him in and praying kind of. But yeah, this is going to be one that I'm going to roll back and forth with. It's going to keep me up a little bit.
Right, because I'm not willing to downgrade his projection based on just a gut feeling.
Yeah,
because
if he plays the whole game, he's going to put up the total that we put in there, right?
So it sure seems like it. And so that's really what it comes down to, is like what you do with a player coming back from injury, specifically an injury like this that is sort of like it's a mental and physical injury. It's both. And that's the thing that scares me. I don't know what's going to happen. I could see him being the highest owned quarterback. I could see no one playing him because they're worried. This one falls totally in the total unknown for me. I think in the end, what I'll probably end up doing is playing him on FanDuel, where you can get away with his price, and not playing him on DraftKings and taking the hedge in that direction, and just not forcing him in, not forcing the big salary in on DraftKings, and just sort of rolling with it on FanDuel, because I think it ends up being correct. Vegas does not seem to think that there's a problem here. They're right around 28 implied points and the favorite. So that's another thing that I kind of trend to, is like, okay, if you're looking for sort of consensus on a guy or a team, if you look at Vegas and say, well, this is, I think, their highest implied total of the year, they trust that he's going to go out and sort of...
Can you read directly into that, right? Because Derek Anderson was good coming in for Cam last week, and Derek Anderson has had some success, especially connecting with Olsen and things. I mean, yeah, like, I think if they thought Cam wasn't going to play, the line would go down, but...
Oh, definitely.
I see that more... I don't know that it's necessarily a one-to-one thing where we can say that, yeah, Cam's questionable status means that, you know, that the line should be lower. So I don't know. I'm not reading into that as much as you are, I don't think.
Yeah, this is right around there. This is what I would expect their line to be on a healthy camp. I don't know. Maybe that's, again, me reading tea leaves a little bit more than I should be. But the other piece of news here, Jonathan Stewart looks like he's going to be back. Can you consider him at all? Their running game has been a mess without him. So it's not like anyone really jumped to the top. I guess Cameron Artis Payne scored maybe a touchdown or two last game, but I don't think that's a guy that they look to as the future of their run game. Can you consider Stewart here? And then what about the Saints side?
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to consider Stewart for sure. We did see Cameron Artis Payne come out and actually perform very well from a yards per carry and an end zone perspective last week. I mean, to get 18 carries on just 34 snaps and turn that into 85 yards and a touch is excellent. But, you know, given that Carolina has struggled to some degree, it's not going to be a direction I want to go in, especially because he might have a short leash coming back from injury and given Payne success. As for the Saints, you know, we talked about this on the Bills side of the ball, where they become a value when they're in faster matchups. The Saints kind of go the other way for me, where they actually wind up losing a considerable amount of value when, you know, they're in slower matchups or matchups that don't speak to their high-flying ways. Carolina, while they're not exactly high-flying, they're not exactly super, super slow, so it's kind of just a middle-of-the-road thing for Breeze. We do have him as the second overall points guy in our system on FanDuel this week, so I think that he's a guy you can absolutely consider, and he probably has a high enough floor to where you can consider him for cash games as well. But yeah, I think, I'm not sure if he'll wind up being the guy, but I don't fault anyone for playing him.
What about some of the skill position guys for the Saints? Ingram, Cooks, Michael Thomas, Snead. I mean, is this sort of like the Patriots thing? Am I just listing too many guys and that ends up becoming the problem for the Saints? Or can you sort of hone in on any single guy from their offense?
I think that Mark Ingram is actually the main guy for me that I'm going to hone in on. I do think the ball is distributed too widely and too unpredictably in the passing game to really love any of those plays. But yeah, Ingram now back-to-back 20 fantasy point performances. San Diego and Atlanta are two plus matchups for sure, but I think that Carolina is not so bad a matchup. And really with Ingram, it's interesting because he's just very affordable. I mean, $6,700 on FanDuel is a phenomenal price for a guy who's pretty clearly the running back one on his team. So in a league average matchup with a team like Carolina, I think it's a very reasonable, you know, guy to plug in there, particularly like that he's been so featured in the passing game, 10 receptions across the last 2 weeks. So yeah, Ingram is a guy that I think is a fine play in all formats.
I think the only reason he's not a little higher here at Carolina, sixth in the league in DVOA against the rush. So some of that has been opponent dependent, I believe, because I don't think they've really faced a ton of just high-end running backs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably the only thing sort of just depressing his value just a little bit. But I'm with you, too. The receiving game, they just have too many guys. They spread the ball just a little too much for me to, at least for cash games, be able to look too much at that team. The next game is a game we discussed in great detail, is the Steelers and the Dolphins. I don't know if we need to walk all the way back down the Steelers side of things. We basically said for cash games, Roethlisberger, Bell, Brown, and Coates are all pretty much in there. Their team, they're sort of like not the opposite of the Saints in this regard, but it's very clear just what they want to do on offense,
right.
And they just say these are the guys, these are the three or four guys that are just going to get the ball for every play. That's the difference of being able to pay their salaries on both sites, just because you sort of just know what you're getting into with them, and it does feel safe. Or when it comes down to it, are the Steelers going to be the highest owned team in terms of cash games this week playing against the Dolphins?
Well, it sure seems like it. I mean, their high end is really, really high. I mean, they have the best running back and the best wide receiver for fantasy. And then Sammy Coates is still affordable enough to where people can dream on him a little bit. And Coates is a guy we've talked about. It's kind of hard to figure out what his future is going to be. Right now, he's coming in for specific sets and is arguably the first read on a lot of those, getting, you know, almost a 25% target share in a lot of cases, potentially a big breakout guy, or potentially a guy whose ceiling has already been reached if this is just how many snaps he's going to play. But again, we wouldn't be talking about him at 7,500, but at 6,400, it's still very, very reasonable. So, yeah, I like all those guys.
The one note on Coates is he cut his finger last game, or lacerated his finger, nice way to say cut, and I don't believe he's practiced this weekend. He's been wearing a cast over that finger, so you just want to probably just take note. Luckily that's a 1 o'clock game, and we're going to know going in. So, but if there's issues with the hand, there could be some other people that come out, and you know, you could maybe see the Jesse Jameses of the world, the tight ends get a little more targeted. Just keep an eye on that, or you just end up seeing the ball go even more to Bell and Brown. And I'm probably just wanting to get as many of those Steelers that are playing into cash games as possible this week. What about the Dolphins side of things? Are they just too much of a mess? Do we like, you know, maybe Jarvis Landry playing catch up this week? What do we like on the Dolphins side?
Landry is really the only fantasy relevant guy over there right now. People have dabbled in Tannehill to no great results this season. But Landry still is, you know, tied for ninth in the league in targets. He's still a guy that you can really consider, and especially in the catch up role. I mean, the Dolphins have no semblance of a running game, and the Steelers have, you know, have been vulnerable to the number one receiver in the catch-up role. So, yeah, I could see Landry doing something. Is he a cash game play? I'm not sure I'd go that far, but very interesting guy who I wouldn't be shocked to see in a top five performance this week.
Yeah, Landry, among his price tier at 6,800 on DraftKings, he could see, if he gets into that double-digit target range, especially because they're playing catch-up and they need to come from behind, it's close for me for cash games at him, mostly just because the price has dipped a little bit on some recent performance, though you're really hoping that they play catch-up in that game, and you're hoping that the Steelers don't just try to take him away and just allow Tannehill to just say, hey, you know, throw it to all the other losers on your team.
Yeah, well, I think one thing that Landry's benefited by is his actual role in the offense, because he's like very unlike a guy like, say, Allen Robinson or T.Y. Hilton, who other teams can try to take away downfield. He actually slides right in underneath the prevent, and I think that we could see them try to take away, you know, whatever else passes for downfield options for the Dolphins, but Landry's often a guy that's not as hurt by that as some other people. So I could see him continuing to have a decent week. But again, you know, I'm not expecting anything gangbusters from him necessarily. More like a solid, if unspectacular, performance. But on DraftKings, you know, the extra receptions from the big targets, that might be wind up being a very good thing and make him a good cash game play there.
Jacksonville heads into Chicago. Chicago coming off a week. We played Hoyer in cash games on FanDuel. That worked out pretty well last week. Is Hoyer, I mean, the price has climbed up a little bit, and is that what stops us on Hoyer now? He's going to be the quarterback. They found some new options possibly in the receiving game. What do we think about the Chicago side of things? They're slight favorites against Jacksonville, and I mean, on the Jacksonville side, they just seem, this is not a team we spent a ton of time talking about this season, but, you know, give me some of your thoughts on this game.
Well, I think Hoyer is a very interesting guy to look at just as a case study in what to do about guys, and Jordan Howard too, frankly, what to do about guys who used to be cheaper, and maybe you got in on the ground floor on Hoyer the way we did, maybe you didn't, but what he did in the past, like his old price doesn't inform what you should do about him at this new price, right? So the fact that we got him for $6,000 last week doesn't necessarily mean that we shouldn't play him for $7,000 this week. And really, if you take his point totals, I mean, he's a guy that averaged better than 20 fantasy points per game over his last 3 weeks. Now, for a frame of reference, you know, 20 fantasy points per game maybe doesn't sound like that much at first, but like his average would put him as, if he just hit his average this week, he would be the fifth overall scoring quarterback, and he would be the cheapest of those quarterbacks by $1,400. So, yeah, I think he's a very good value. He's going to continue being that way if we believe in the role and the production. And I think I'm starting to kind of believe. I mean, it didn't really matter last week. We saw him spreading it out to Cameron Meredith. You know, even with Alshon Jeffrey being banged up, it really hasn't mattered. Same thing with Zach Miller. So, yeah, I believe in Hoyer, actually, and I think it's another nice matchup with Jacksonville. And I wouldn't fault anyone, particularly if you want to take him over a guy like Tyrod Taylor on FanDuel, where you can get him cheaper than Taylor as well. I think Hoyer seems to have the higher floor. So, yeah, he's a guy I'm definitely a believer in.
Are we still on Jordan Howard as being an every down back? Is he, the price on him has also climbed? He's in that almost high 7,000s range on FanDuel now, low 6,000s on DraftKings. Is he enough of an every down back guy that we can trust the floor on him for cash games? They're slight favorites over Jacksonville this week.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly like him on DraftKings just because he has been featured in the passing game. I mean, he's been good for about 40 yards receiving per game. He's gotten the end zone out of the backfield as a pass catcher last game too. So, I mean, I'm a little bit, you know, you never love to see a guy who you're going to pay almost $8,000 for only get 16 carries in a game. But given that he got 19 overall touches and was coming off a week where they had a lead and he got 26 touches, you know, I feel pretty reasonable about that. And I think, you know, with Chicago being favored this week at Jacksonville as well, I think that, you know, that's going to hopefully give some stability around his workload and make him a very reasonable option in all formats.
What about Jacksonville side? Bortles, Allen Robinson, the run game is atrocious, so I don't even want to go there. I mean, what about Bortles and guys like Allen Robinson just from a high upside perspective?
Yeah, I mean, well, Robinson's a guy that people are going to understandably be sleeping on right now. I mean, Bortles too, frankly. But Robinson, you know, continues to get a huge target share, and we've seen guys like him in the past where, you know, if you're going to get 15 targets in a game, now sure, Robinson might only turn them into 6 receptions in with some great frequency even, but given that he is a big downfield threat, he is actually a guy they look at in the red zone as well, he's going to have a lead upside from week to week. The question for, you know, the listener out there is going to be, is he really a guy, is he the guy you want to spend $8,600 on? You know, I think he does have transcendent upside. Doug is shaking his head, giving me a sassy no. I do not want to spend up, sir. No, thank you. But yeah, like, is he really the guy you want to go out on a limb on? Because, you know, it used to be with Robinson, you could actually count on him for the super elite targets, and that really hasn't come to fruition this season either. So yeah, well, is he there? Like, I talk about the guys on my short list of people I would consider even for big tournaments. Even if you're going to put in 50 tournament lineups, like, there's still only so many guys that are going to be in your rotation. Robinson is a guy I would consider for my rotation, but he would be like in a lineup, you know, not a mainstay in terms of big upside.
Jamaal Charles, it looks like he's going to be back this week for the Chiefs. They are taking on the Raiders. This line has moved. This is one of those really interesting line movements, and I'm wondering what you think of this. The game starts as the Raiders -2 and has shifted since open to now Kansas City -1. What do you make of that? Is that a Jamaal Charles-driven thing? Is it just they... I mean, this is Kansas City favorite against a 4-1 Oakland team in Oakland. What do you make of that line movement?
Yeah, I mean, I think what people are keying in on is the fact that Oakland's defense has just been insane this season. And by insane, I mean insanely awful. I didn't even mean that for that to be a stupid joke, but it came out that way.
Really stupid.
I mean, Oakland, they have allowed the by far most passing yards per game this season. 330 yards per game is actually a full 10% more than the next highest team in the Jets. And while Kansas City is not necessarily known for their great passing acumen, Oakland's also allowed the fifth most rushing yards per game. So, you know, part of that comes from the fact that Oakland's been putting up big point totals themselves, and other teams have had to kind of race to stay in the game in some cases. But I think that, you know, people are looking at Jamaal Charles's return and saying that, yeah, Kansas City should be able to move the chains on them. I think they view Charles as a guy who opens up a lot of options for Kansas City because he's just such a more dynamic back than any of the other options they've had there. So, yeah, I think that's what they're seeing. Whether I'm a full believer in that or not, I'm not so sure, but I think that's where that line movement comes from.
Yeah, we talked about Alex Smith as possibly being a cheaper quarterback that we can consider on FanDuel. We talked about that in the last podcast, is trying to give some, you know, cheaper options. I still like that. That line movement actually strikes me as helps me feel even better about it from an offensive side of things. But another guy showing up sort of high on our system right now is Amari Cooper. What do you make of the Amari Cooper, Michael Crabtree piece? Cooper torched the Chargers last game with no Verrett. Do you see him still having sort of the upside there? Do they just kind of share the ball among too many players? That's sort of been a theme for us with a couple different teams.
No, I don't think Cooper is too much of a victim of the too much sharing problem. I mean, yeah, he ran into that against Baltimore where he only had 11% of the team's targets, but, you know, back up to an 18% target share against San Diego. Kansas City, it is a slow matchup, but the thing on Cooper is you're actually getting him at a deep discount to the other guys that are kind of his comps. So, you know, among the guys that are around that top 10 in the league in targets area, he's just a lot cheaper than the rest of them. And he's not like a classic cash game play, and I think that's actually what depresses his price, because he's much more in the T.Y. Hilton, Allen Robinson sort of build, where he doesn't convert a lot of his targets into receptions, but the ones that he does are the ones that he dug, I almost say. You're my buddy, Doug. I looked at you and saw that. But the ones that he does turn into very high impact plays. And so I think that's kind of what the system's saying there. This is very much a case where it's going to take the average of Cooper's performances here. So, you know, you might wind up, this might be the week where he does the 5 for 48 and no touchdowns like he had against Baltimore, or it could be the 6 for 138 and a touch like he did against San Diego. So it's up to you to determine which you think it's going to be, or somewhere in the middle thing. But yeah, I'm bullish on him overall. If you play this game 1,000 times, I think you'll feel happy playing him in all this.
Yeah, Chiefs have been pretty good against wide receiver ones this year, but I still like the Oakland just throws so much. They've been clear about this is going to be their game plan, is just throw, because they just don't have much in the way of running.
And it's a price thing again, right? Like, right. 7,100 is just cheap for a guy who's the wide receiver one.
The next game we have here is Falcons heading to Seattle. This is another game that we talked a decent amount in the last podcast. We talked about the Christian Michael piece of, and I think we see him as a pretty safe play this week. The also Doug Baldwin, if he were to return to getting into that double-digit target category. The Falcons have been really bad on defense this season. The Seahawks are heavy favorites heading in here, -6.5, which is just what you like to see for your running back, for Michael, and he looks to have the lion's share of the carries again. Can we pair Michael and Baldwin together in cash games, you think? Do you think that Falcons matchup is just good enough that I could consider doing something like that?
I think so. I mean, the Falcons have been quite futile against the pass this season. They've allowed the 5th most passing yards per game, and they've really struggled, I mean, historically as well, against wide receiver ones. Now, Baldwin is not the classic wide receiver one in the sense that he's not really a guy who's going to race downfield and catch bombs or anything, but given that he's so prevalent for them in the red zone as well, I think he's a guy who winds up having a high floor because of the target share and winds up having a reasonable upside as well due to his red zone usage. So, yeah, I think he's a fine consideration. Is he a guy you're going to be like fist pumping, jamming in there at 7,600? I don't think so. And I think that's why, you know, he might not feel like a big tournament play. But in terms of like just a fine high floor guy that you're happy to have in there and for him to get his 2x points per dollar and you worry about other positions, I think it's fine. I think it's worth noting here the resurgence of Jimmy Graham. So Jimmy Graham now back-to-back games with better than a 19% target share and, you know, over 100 receiving yards. So he's been a classic red zone target in the past two, and that might really wind up damping our enthusiasm on Baldwin going forward. But yeah, still keeping an eye on him.
Dallas heads into Green Bay. We talked a little bit of how Aaron Rodgers earlier in our Week 5 recap about how Aaron Rodgers is basically now just a 60% completion guy, and there it's just hard to get excited about him in general. I will say the Green Bay is -4 favorites going into this week, which actually struck me as a little high considering how well Dallas has played this season. There's no news on Eddie Lacy or James Stark, so I'm not totally sure we know about their running back situation. If that were to crystallize before game day, either A, with Starks being out and we just knew Lacy was going to get all the carries, possibly. It really is more interesting going the other way if Lacy were to not play and we could get Starks. Is there anything here, I mean, from the Dallas side of the ball, Prescott, I don't know, Elliott, they're playing, going in as underdogs heading into the game. What do we think about this game in general?
Yeah, I think you touched on a lot of the key points here. I mean, Elliott, I think, is a guy who's going to continue to be solid, but just on the outside looking in, I view him the same way I do a guy like LeSean McCoy. The usage with Elliott really is truly elite, and given that they're still, you know, until we see is Romo going to come back after the bye or what, he still is kind of generating most of the offense for them. So I don't fault anyone if they just want to view him as a safe play and put him in there in cash games. Again, I think he'll wind up being on the outside looking in for us, but that doesn't make him a bad play or anything. Witten, for me, you know, it's too erratic probably to get involved in the tight end situation. Most of his targets came from one game. The rest of the Dallas situation I find to be pretty uninspiring.
The Sunday night game is the Colts heading into Houston. Houston coming off a week where they had to play a very, very tough Minnesota defense, so I'm not sure how much we can take from that game. The Texans are a weird team. They just can't seem to get DeAndre Hopkins the ball. I'm not sure if they're motivated. I'm not sure if that's a Brock Osweiler piece where you know, you kind of get what you pay for or get what you didn't really know that much about going ahead out of it.
Yeah, it's decision. Like when you buy a car you've never driven before.
Kind of. So Lamar Miller was a guy that we had seen getting kind of insane usage before the Minnesota game. They fell down pretty early and just needed to rely on passing. So I'm not sure what we can take from that. Do you see them trying to establish Miller again early in this game? He's clearly a guy before last week that they wanted to have basically dominate their touches in a given game. Do you think he gets back to like that mid-20s or higher looks and possibly even gets into the end zone this week?
You know, I actually don't. I think that Miller is more of a Marvin Jones comp than anything else. I mean, we saw him kick off the season. So his total touches per game went from 32 to 27 to 25, 22, and then 9 last week. It just doesn't seem to me that that's working, that plan of giving Miller the ball a bunch. And given that it's not working, I mean, nothing is working, so who knows? Like, they're going to be trying anything they can do to put some points on the board. But no, I think Miller's now, he's more of a guy to me that's kind of just overpriced based on what he's done. Now, it doesn't mean that he doesn't have it in him. Like, he might go out there and get a high 20s touch game. And if they do get down and close, like, I think he could punch in a score or two. But, I mean, 0 touchdowns on the season, not really being used as much in the passing game either. I'm not thrilled. I think if you're going to play him, it's going to be a very fringe, big tournament play only. Nothing close to a cash game consideration for me.
I think this is sort of the make-or-break week on him. It's either he establishes himself as like a running back one because, you know, some of the other matchups, right? They fell down early to the Patriots, and they end up getting shut out that game. They weren't going to be able to run tons. Titans game, they end up getting the win, though the Titans defense plays pretty slow, so I'm not sure what we can take from it. And then the Vikings are just a good defense, and they were down. So I think it's either he's back to that mid-20s touches this week, or just is not happening going forward. So
yeah, I think that's fair, but I think at some point, like, I would be hesitant, even if he had a reasonable game here, say he had 20 touches, 22 touches, and like 110 yards, didn't get in the end zone again, like, at some point, we're more than a third of the way through the season after this week, so I don't know. I mean, I feel like we love Miller going into the season, I think for good reason, but the production simply hasn't been there. The yards per carry have been pretty bad. I'm going to need more than, I think, just one good game from him.
The Colts are 31st in the league in DVOA against the rush and 30th against the pass. There's not going to be a better matchup for the Texans.
Fair. And if he's bad this week, then you can definitely write him off. I guess that bolsters my point, I feel, that even if he is good this week, it doesn't really mean that we can like just trust him going forward.
And this is where I wanted to probably end up playing him a little bit more in tournaments. I think I possibly will default to some of the things that we liked about him going into the season. And I don't want to do it for cash games because I think there's just enough questions about the Texans offense in general. But I like him from a tournament upside piece if we think that they end up sort of headed back to his role from earlier in the season and people are off of him because the recent performances have been pretty garbagey. So that's where I do actually really like him from a tournament perspective.
And I think there's two guys to highlight on the Colts side of the ball as well. We've used Hilton as a comp for a bunch of other guys so far this week, and I think it's fair because he really is right now the kind of archetypal guy who gets a lot of targets, doesn't convert a lot of them, and turns a lot of his targets into big plays. Obviously a fantastic performance against Chicago last week, which was kind of the other piece of the bread of the sandwich of all things T.Y. Hilton, which was two performances against Chicago and San Diego where he was in winning big tournament lineups, and then kind of a dud against Jacksonville where he probably let you down on the prices you had to pay to play him. Now, Hilton, I think, is interesting, though, because unlike a lot of these other guys, he just does have that huge, huge upside, and it almost doesn't matter what the game script is. Like, the Colts just have a certain number of designed plays for him. He's almost at exactly 18% target share every single week, with that Jacksonville game being the only exception. And the thing there was that was a team that they did feel they could control the ball more against. I see this game in Houston as running some of that same risk, but he's a guy I would be happy to play even with some of the risks involved. And the other guy I think is kind of interesting is Frank Gore. Now, a lot of Frank Gore's backups are, you know, questionable or dinged up or whatever, and he's a guy that we have seen the Colts deploy in greater numbers when things have been going well for them. And since things have been going well for the Colts so rarely this season, we haven't seen a lot of Frank Gore's best. But, you know, you take a game like San Diego where he had 22 overall touches. Against Jacksonville, he had 21 touches. He is their goal line back, and I think that he could be a guy that puts up a big total.
Yeah, I'm with you. The Colts just strike me as just a weird team. I don't know. I just get worried because I just think they're a bad team. But yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on all the points on Hilton. The final game of the week, though, it's funny about these Monday night games. They become less important because FanDuel and DraftKings have both said that they're just going to have those main slates only feature the Sunday games, which I think in general is correct. But this is a case where I still think if you're playing, if you played Thursday, it came into play. If you're playing the Sunday plus Monday or the late Sunday, there are some interesting pieces here. The Jets head into Arizona. Arizona is going to have Carson Palmer back. They gave the ball a ton to David Johnson last week because Palmer was not there. What could we learn last week from the Cardinals' performance? And do we like, the system loves Brandon Marshall from a target share perspective. Give me your thoughts going for both the Cardinals and mostly just the Brandon Marshall piece.
Sure. I think if you're playing that overnight slate, like that Sunday night into Monday slate, that Marshall is going to be in all your lineups almost without question. I mean, with Decker out, he's just been the guy in every phase of the game, both downfield and in the possession game. So just a phenomenal value, almost a shame. He did make the lineups in the Thursday slate, so that included every single game. So, you know, just one of our top overall plays of the week and one of your better calls, I think, from last week as well. I do think David Johnson, I think he remains pretty interesting on such a short slate. He is, like, if you look at the other running backs playing in that slate, so it's Gore, Miller, Forte, and David Johnson. David Johnson is clearly the safest guy in that group to me, and maybe you want to pair him, go cheap with Gore, or... Yeah, I guess you could hold your nose and play Miller, I'm not sure. But yeah, given that you're probably going to want to pay up at wide receiver, it might get a little bit dicey here. But yeah, I could see you playing David Johnson for sure. And even Palmer, frankly, on a relatively cheap price tag as well.
Yeah, they're huge favorites. The Jets are kind of a mess now. Revis is out, I believe, again. And they, up until, even with Revis, the Jets ranked 32nd in the league in DVOA against the pass. Now, the flip side of that is they ranked 3rd in DVOA against the rush, but I suspect for them, the truth is more in the middle on at least the rush piece of it. So I could still be totally fine deploying Johnson.
Yeah, DVOA a little tricky to use when it comes to teams that have unusual game scripts, right? So the Jets can look strong in DVOA against the run, because they know that the team that's crushing them is going to keep running the ball. So it doesn't always play out that way. Like, a lot of times teams are bad against both the pass and the run, but in teams that have really struggled in one phase of the game, it makes sense that they're almost strong on the other side of the game because, you know, just because of the way the incentives wind up breaking out. So I don't want to trust that completely. And I think that David Johnson still has a fine game here.
All right, that's it for us for week 6. We are from Daily Fantasy Sports Rankings, or DFSR.com. Head over to the site, grab that free trial to our projection system that's really informed all the amazing thoughts that we had in this podcast. Hey, buddy, great to sit across from you, and I thought we just kind of crushed it.
Yeah, it seemed like we spent most of the time crushing it once we actually had the recording system set up properly.
Yeah. Head over to the site, free 3-day trial, $29.95 a month after that. Optimal lineups powered by Lineup Lab. Good luck on Sunday. We will talk to you again next week.